Blog Talk Radio.
Your host of Earth Ancients, startling new discoveries from our planet's distant past. Welcome. It's Saturday, July 26th, and I am broadcasting from Oakland. It's beautiful today. It's a great day to get out. I hope everything in your area, wherever you're listening, is you can get out today and relax and enjoy hopefully what should be a nice day. This is All Things Atlantis Week, and I didn't really prepare for that to be that way, but I was introduced to our guest today via a number of contacts on Facebook. His name is Bill Donato, and his work is fascinating. His research has been posted on the Facebook page. I've been posting his side scan sonar work, his petroglyph research. Bill's been it looks like he's been researching for over 30 years, almost since the day he graduated with his anthropology degree. And we'll talk a little bit about that when he comes on. But I really recommend, if you haven't looked at the Earth Ancients Facebook page, to take a look at what I consider some of the best evidence for a sunken civilization. I am not a scientist or a sonar expert, but from what I can see in these images, they are definitely buildings. And they're not just hints of buildings. We're talking stairways, we're talking pillars, we're even talking roofs, 100 feet plus under the Bimini Ocean, off Bimini Islands. I've had a great interest in Atlantis, and traveling through and researching various Mayan sites in the Yucatan and in Central America, always in the back of my mind, I had to wonder, who influenced the Maya? Who influenced the Aztecs? And if you studied Mayan traditions and even the codices that are left to us from the Aztecs, there is reference to an influence. There's also reference to Atlan, which is a place in the Pacific Ocean. In the decade that I spent from 1997 to about 2005, that's actually a little more than a decade, I found there is architectural changes from the pre-classic, classic, and then post-classic period of the Maya. But the thing that most people don't realize, and I've outlined this a little bit on my various blogs on Facebook, is there is a progression not only in the time period, but there's a progression in the the architecture. And the architecture in these buildings is unique. And the other thing that's unique is there's only a small portion of these ruins that has been excavated. And I'm referring to Chichen Itza, and I'm referring to Uxmal, which is on the Gulf of Mexico ocean side, and then in Coba. And the thing that a lot of people don't realize is that the Maya cherished and honored their ancestors. And so for thousands of years, they would build on top of pre-existing structures. And we see that in the pyramids notably Chichen Itza and Uxmal, but also in Tikal and Copan. Tikal and Copan are in Guatemala. They did not tear down the previous structures. They actually built on top of them. And what's unique when you study a lot of these buildings is there's rarely dates given to the earliest structure, because they only can do carbon-14 dating with organic matter. And so it's been my interest to study the earliest of the architectural designs. There's an influence there that I think, and it's always in the back of your mind. I'm not a traditional archaeologist. I'm not even an orthodox archaeologist. I'm a research individual. I do research on these places. I write about the Maya, but what the orthodox scientists don't do, which I do, is follow the traditions, the oral traditions, and whatever is written down of the Maya. And they discuss an influence, and they discuss their ancestors. And their ancestors, it's turning out to be, are very old, extremely old. So what are the references for Atlantis? Well, there's Plato's story of Atlantis, which is the most famous. That's traditional. We know about that. And what are the unorthodox references to Atlantis? Well, the most famous reference is Edgar Cayce, who was a seer, a psychic, who went into a trance state, would describe, pick up an individual's, I guess it was an energy field, and describe the individual from an energetic point of view. But what's fascinating about Cayce is the vast majority of his work on individuals and these readings is he would see the person in a lifetime that was in Atlantis. If you study anything about Cayce, you'll know that his thousands and thousands and thousands of readings were of individuals in the Atlantis lifetime. And what is interesting is, and there's some work based on Cayce that's come out, is the references were of that period, of the Atlantis period, 9,000 plus years ago. Atlantis is thought to have started hundreds of thousands of years ago. That was the first civilization. Then it progressed to a second one when there was a land change, and then there was a final one, which was ended about 9,500 years ago when there was a destruction. So there's three phases. But Cayce goes into all three phases. And what's interesting if you study Casey's work is he would read an individual physically, emotionally, mentally, and reference the lifetime in Atlantis. So he felt, and his diagnosis, if you want to call it that, of the problem the person was going through. And there wasn't necessarily always a problem. Some people came to Cayce who had illnesses, but a lot of them just wanted a reading. He referenced the lifetime in Atlantis because it was the most influential. Through lifetimes, the energy of the Atlantis period was so influential that it was basically molding that individual. It was, you know, influencing him or her to such a degree that was the reference point that Cayce brought forward. Because of this lifetime when you were an engineer, and that's the other thing. If you read the information, reference to the readings, Cayce actually described the person's work, what environment was like, and many times these readings describe technology, working with crystal energy, working with flying machines, working with machines that went underwater. And so he describes a highly advanced technological society in his readings. You know, orthodox science is not going to take that because it's the word of a seer or a psychic. And how do you validate that? Well, you can't. You can't validate it. It's all hearsay. But in a way, you can, because Cayce does give reference to locations around the world that have been influenced by Atlantis. And one of the big places is the Yucatan Peninsula of Mexico. And Casey even references and says that the Maya were descendants from Atlanteans or from Atlantis, among other groups. And that's always been fascinating to me, and as somebody who is very interested in the Maya, you can see the racial cultural differences. You can see the Caucasians. You can see the African-centric individuals in the standing stones, in the stele. You can see the Asiatic influence. And then you can see, I think, cultures that have died off. The longheads, the longhead culture, the elongated craniums, not the ones that were bound, head bound. These are people that actually were born and had these elongated craniums, featured in artwork, they're featured in sculpture. So, and of course we have the physical remains, the skeletal remains of these long-headed individuals all through the Yucatan Peninsula. I'm very excited to introduce my guest today, Bill Donato. He is a classically trained archaeologist, and he's worked with other individuals, notably Dr. Greg Little and his wife, and he was part of a television series called Quest for Atlantis in 2009, Startling New Secrets. It was aired on the Sci-Fi Channel. It was quite interesting. He's actually also been featured in a number of other TV programs and publications. Bill is an American archaeologist who holds an MA in anthropology. He's a regular contributor to Ancient America and Atlantis Rising magazine. And he advocates Bimini location for Atlantis. He's the founder of Atlantis, the Atlantis Organization, or TAO, whose work is now continued by the APEX Institute, which was established in 2001 to investigate various sites throughout the Bahamas. The interesting thing about Bill, and we're going to bring him on in a second here, his master's thesis was a re-examination of Atlantis theory. I find that interesting. So at a very young age, he had an interest in Atlantis. And then he's been a member of a number of research teams who have claimed definitive evidence of harbors off of the Bimini Islands. He's been featured on the Sci-Fi Channel, the History Channel, and most notably, this Quest for Atlantis, Startling New Secrets. We're going to hear a short clip of this series, and I want you just to hear what was discovered. This is a clip we're going to play from 2009, and it includes Bill and Dr. Little and his wife and a number of other people. It kind of gives you kind of some nice overview of what we're going to be talking about today. So here's a short clip.
Near the tiny deserted island of Quezon near Cuba, our divers swim among a group of large rocks that look strikingly similar to those that make up the Bimini Road. Arranged in an arc, some of the blocks appear to be stacked in places, with smaller cut stones wedged in between them. Team leader Greg Little pulls one of the stones from beneath the pile and breaks off a sample for lab testing, before moving on to look for some artifacts that will validate his theory that this is yet another ancient harbor. While the divers look for a physical link to Atlantis, John Van Auken focuses on feeling a metaphysical link to the chaotic scene he believes took place here more than 10,000 years ago.
Lots of activity. It's a very busy place, and it's very connected all the way through here onto the Yucatan Peninsula. There's lots of travel underwater, on the water, and in the air. There's much preparation for escaping the final destruction here.
Van Auken heads the Casey Organization in Virginia Beach, the Association for Research and Enlightenment, and is an expert on Casey's visions and prophecies regarding Atlantis. In hopes of finding an even deeper connection to Atlantis, Van Auken decides to go ashore. The island of Khe Sao is rugged, windswept, and desolate. But high on a rocky hill, Ben Okun tries to connect with Casey's vision of Atlantis' final days.
I get a strong feeling of the Casey material related to the Atlanteans escaping with their records, trying to keep some record of themselves.
According to Edgar Casey, there were three sets of records from Atlantis. One sank beneath the waves when Atlantis was destroyed. One went to Egypt and lies buried beneath the right paw of the Sphinx. And the third set came here to the Yucatan Peninsula.
It's my belief that if the Atlantean Hall of Records are found at any of the three sites, Egypt, Yucatan, or Bimini, that it would be in everyone's interest that an archaeologist, that someone from science be involved with the process so that there's no question of whether it's real or not real.
Laura Little, who has done extensive research on the subject, believes the records that went to the Yucatan are beneath an ancient Mayan temple in Guatemala.
It's such a monstrous and beautiful set of ruins, but nobody has been able to get everything done that needs to be done in that site.
According to John Van Auken, that's because few mainstream archaeologists are willing to risk their reputations on projects that involve the A word, Atlantis.
The A word turns off archaeologists real fast. When you say Atlantis, you're into legend and lore, not into history and fact, and you have no evidence for what you're talking about. And I understand that point. I understand them. I understand their view.
Atlanteans joined with and may have been part of the bloodline of these particular cultures. Edgar Casey does say that the Mayans are descended from Atlanteans as well as other groups. So it actually should raise their culture up.
If you have a civilization that may have been more advanced than ours, and it was destroyed because of something they did, well, clearly, we have a lot to learn from that.
Well, there you go. Hey, Bill, welcome to the program. Really amazing to have you on with us. Now, that was that aired in 2009, and we can hear a little telling us that there not really isn't any evidence. But now we do have evidence. Is that? It looks like you have some solid evidence with these sonars. Yep. Is that correct?
Yeah, thank you for having me on. What happened was that we were doing a program then, and it was later that we did the stuff in 2006. And that was what proved the conclusions that we... wait a second. No, that was... you know, the date's wrong here. Yeah, 2006. A lot of stuff happened in 2006. We did the program first, which was in, like, January. And it was on the Peace Bank, but it was the island of Anguilla Cay. And I was made aware of by Herb Sawinski. There's also a Khe Sao Island, which had some features too. They're very similar to the Bimini things, but both the Bimini and this I personally regard now as probably being Phoenician Carthaginian and the deeper stuff being Atlantean.
We got to talk about that in a minute, but I want to go back. Now, this is I want you to tell our audience a little bit about your background. Now, you're an Orthodox archaeologist, graduated from California University. What shifted you from your classically trained background into wanting to begin looking for Atlantis? And we heard it in that brief clip that it's basically a death knell to even consider researching Atlantis. What was your shift, and why did you decide to make the jump? Tell us about that.
Well, actually, it was the other way around. I had always thought there was, even since like junior high, that there seemed to be evidence of other cultures. I was actually first interested in Mu and the Lemuria stuff, and then the Casey stuff came along. And when I was in junior college, I didn't really pay attention to it, but somebody had indicated they'd found something, and then I had read the article by Robert Marks and Argosy, where they had a lot of the Bimini stuff and some things near Andros, and that got me interested. And then in 74, I went kind of look around, and it was pretty much a disaster of a trip because nothing went right. But I photographed one of the features, which both Rebikov and Valentine and Zink and all of them were interested, which was in Bimini Bay, which is a half by quarter mile rectangle defined by vegetation. It looks like stone, but it's vegetation. And that was one of the things we actually did in the later part of 2006. After we did that program, Greg wanted to go back and do some things at Bimini. in 2006 in June, and I discovered the third harbor feature at Bimini, which is the Paradise Point Pier, which is clearly a pier. It's a big mound that extends out there. And then we did my expedition, or I did it with Christy Michael, also an archaeologist, and we used Esley and Krista Brown, the same people the Littles had used, because they'd been to the places before. And what we had done was side scan and sub-bottom profiling. Sub-bottom profiling hadn't been done before.
And well, let's go back and talk a little bit about, real quickly, this. So you graduated with an anthropology degree, and you know, most people that graduate will start doing field work and start studying. So what did you do when you got out of school? Did you say, okay, I'm going to look for a job as an anthropologist, or did you say...
Yeah, good luck on that one.
Pardon me?
Oh, yeah, good luck on that. I mean, the ones you see were places where they want you to work for nothing and get credit in Wyoming with frozen ground. You know, that's pretty much what was available.
Right.
We ended up doing our own
stuff. So what
would
you say you did? What did you do? What did you end up doing when you got your degree? Because, I run into a tremendous amount of Orthodox archaeologists that will not even talk about Atlantis. So you're a rare bird, and I wanted to get to the bottom of it in the beginning, and then we can see the progression of where your interest was, and then how you discovered these amazing ruins. So tell us a little more about what you did following graduation.
Yeah, actually, I worked almost immediately thereafter with Cal State Fullerton's Public Antiquity Salvage Team at Huntington Beach at a site that was there for a short while. Then a number of other jobs, and then in 87, Doug Richards, because I'd written a letter to the ARE people, and I'd got a response from Hewling Casey and all that stuff, but he invited me to a conference in 87, which basically got everything together, because then in 89, Vonda Osman, Joan Hanley, and David Zink did the first Quest for Atlantis conference at Bimini. And we had a whole lot of stuff that was going on at that time. The Rebikovs happened to come at the same time, so our groups joined together, and he did a flyover the island. I had remembered the In Search Of program that Nimoy did in the 70s, and I happened to see the fish mound that was there, which is about 529 feet from tail to nose to tail. And shortly thereafter, the late Raymond Lee, whose photographs you have, the kind of red zoomorphic effigy.
Oh, those are the photos of the aerial shot looking down.
Right, yeah, the aerial is great. He's a surveyor, so we had him go at certain levels, and there was a whole complex that was seen. See, initially this was discovered by Jim Richardson. Manson Valentine called me to make sure that I got the right information, because it was his friend. He wanted his friend to get the thing. We found out there was a whole complex of various mounts.
Right. Tell us, now, I haven't posted this photograph yet, but I'm going to post it today. Tell us about this this fish-shaped structure and the other structures that were photographed. This very early photograph that a lot of people don't know about, and this is the Bimini Island.
The 50s, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about that. What are these? Were they created as markers? What's the theory behind these?
Well, here's the interesting thing.
Features?
I got through Gene Hunt of the Louisiana Mound Society. I got in touch with Joseph B. Mahan, Institute of Studying American Cultures. And I did a talk for them one time, but he had known he had a connection with the Yuchi Indians, and they had stories that of multiple origins. One of them happened to be with Andros Island, and they mentioned various classes, and some are represented by the cat and the fish, which is prominent there, and they were very interested in it. And they have a story that this area was once kind of a legendary place that was destroyed, as do the Arawaks, the Cherokee have similar stories, and so on. And so, it was meant to be seen by, quote, those above, unquote. So that got really kind of interesting, and it seems to be earlier than the period of the more recent Arawaks were there when Columbus came by. Whatever the connection is, it may be an intermediate one between the Atlantis phase and then the more recent phase that went on. And with respect to my thesis, I was lucky I had pretty open-minded professors. One of them had heard about the Bimini stuff, and later on, after I'd done the work, one of the other teachers got interested in it also. I was initially going to do it on Bimini, but they said, why don't you do it on a more general thing? So I did the Atlantis thing, and as I'd indicated to you, I put at the very beginning of the thesis that there were three questions that would have to be answered in order to give legitimacy to it. First off is some kind of massive cataclysm in roughly 9600 BC. Structures in the area, which of course would date to that, and some indications of higher technology. And of course, if you have architecture and uniformity of measurement systems, you have that right there. And we have all of those right now.
Wow. Let me just make sure I let everyone know that we are taking questions today. And if you'd like to ask a question, we'll take them later on in the program. You can call us at 347-826-9565. That's 347-826-9565. And I will call on you. You can ask Bill a direct question. So be sure to call us if you'd like to. So right out of school, you knew what sounds like you pretty much knew what you wanted to do, which was research Atlantis. Was Bimini your first target area?
Okay. Here's the ironic thing about that. It was discovered by Manson Valentine in 1669. They had the features. And people thought that was the Edgar Cayce prediction coming to light. Dmitry Rebikov, who's as well known as Cousteau, and Ada Rebikov, they're very well known for their work in marine archaeology in the Mediterranean. They did a lot of things, including the very famous photo mosaic that Bimini wrote. David Zink did the first side scan sonar ever done off the western side with Dr. Harold Edgerton.
And, what year was that?
Was actually in the 70s, I think it was. And
Sonar had been developed sufficiently that you could take.
Yeah, it might have been. I'm not really sure what time, but when we did ours in 93, the only other people to do it, we were still using an old version which had a wet paper readout, and we were having to watch things and write down GPS coordinates. And then when we did it later on in 98 and 99, we used a Marine Sonics one, which is all electronic. We had the GPS was encoded in the system itself, so every pixel had a GPS. And it's a much better system, but it turned out there were severe GPS problems, which we found out the next year.
Okay,
but
so
that's global positioning system coordinates for those that are unfamiliar.
Right. So, what is your estimation? What is the Bimini Road? What do you think it was? A true harbor, which is the theory, but do you think it was actually linked to a city, or was it just a standing harbor linked to the Bimini Islands?
It's even more complicated than that. And the 1669 ties into our stuff, which I'll get to later. But basically, I had asked Rebikov, I record on a microcassette, he talked very softly, and if he'd seen things like the Bimini, and he said he had, and there were harbor works in the Mediterranean. He even noted a similar feature there, which I also relocated later on, that is a technique that's used there. There were actually two features that were known. One is called Proctor's Road, which isn't a road either, and it is lines of stone and circles of stone, and some of them are minimally modified, and that's where we found most of the stone anchors, which are holes, some of which have rope grooves, and I have three of them that have comparative rope grooves on all of them. Marx, in his article, had indicated that a Carthaginian coin had been found on the shore there at Bimini. So this stuff, basically there's three things at Bimini, which it is conclusively a harbor site. It has the Bimini Road, which is a reverse J shape, which is virtually identical to those in the Mediterranean at Atlit, A-T-L-I-T, and Dor, off of Israel, I think. And the Littles found that, and you know, mainly because since they've been involved, computers have, when we first started, they weren't really all that available. The circles of stones on Proctor's Road are like the mooring things, which are inward of that, and it's not that deep. And then you have the Paradise Pier, which comes literally off of Paradise Point and goes up several hundred feet into the water with stones clearly placed and some anchors there. And both Greg and I have separately done a lot of work on that one, too. So it has three features that are harbor works.
The megalithic stones, which are at Bimini, are you saying there's similar megalithic stones in the Mediterranean offshore?
The reverse J apparently helps keep the inside clear, and the Phoenician and Carthaginian culture was using those. And what's intriguing to me is that may tie the whole thing together is that they have the same haplogroup as virtually every group that's ever been related to Atlantis, and that's haplogroup X, which the Littles again found. That's found in the Iroquois, the Mound Builders, the Guanches of the Canary Islands, the Berbers, the Basques, the Italians, the Jews, the Egyptians, and especially the Druzes in Lebanon. It's the Atlantis haplogroup, basically.
Well, if that's the case, why hasn't the Orthodox world stood up and paid attention to this discovery? If there is, because I mean that's what archaeology is all about: reference, reference, reference. The Maya, you know, they say the Maya were at the same time as the ancient Romans, and that's how they can relate it, and they can kind of pencil it in and put it in a place. So if you found references to similar roads, why haven't we heard more about it?
Actually, Greg and I did talk about that, and I says, you know, you should get some expert in the Mediterranean to come here and give their you know, their informed opinion on it, because we still have people that are trying to say that this is a natural feature, which is ridiculous, and the person that promulgated that one recently on a kids program on this had claimed that an anchor we brought up was one of his cored stones, which it wasn't. His cored stone was from the Bimini Road. The anchor was from Proctor's Road, which are about a quarter of a mile away. And we knew where his stuff was because we'd videotaped and photographed it. And there have been several. Greg had one dated, and it was about to Roman times, about the time of Christ, maybe a little earlier. One of the multiple I brought up was only to like 1600 AD. It was probably Arawak. So there's a huge range. And the big one brought up, by the way, probably weighed about 400 pounds.
Okay. So so let's go back just a little bit. So you got out of school, you start looking at the Bimini area, but you also did research in South America. Mm-hmm. Did you find any tie-ins at all with any ruins that you studied in South America that you would think would be an advanced culture of maybe an Atlantean satellite?
Yeah. People, when they think of South America, they think solely of Inca ruins, but there's also quite a few other styles. But the Inca one is interesting because it's an old style that's been used for a very long time. And I was really surprised when my friend Vonda Osman had some photographs, and I thought it was of Peru, and it turned out it was from Egypt, from the Assyrian at Abydos, which is the lower level. If you look at the upper step, it's kind of primitive. And this is very un-Egyptian in the fact that it's very bare. You see practically nothing carved on there. You see the same knobs on the stone and the same placement that you find in Peru. And apparently you have it at the Sphinx Temple also. And, of course, these are the ones that Schock and West have been focusing on. I talked to Robert Schock in the early 90s on the phone, and he had found depressions in front of the Sphinx using an acoustic thing. And now they've found actually more caves, and it's pretty much the whole Giza area is fenced off right now. So there's a lot of stuff.
Did you find specific references in South America? I mean, where were you? Were you in like
I was pretty much everywhere in Peru.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we stayed first at Cuzco, and it's a really neat place because they were virtually across the street from what was the capital of the Inca Empire, the great temple, you know, where the gold had been ripped off the walls and one of their major artifacts hadn't been found, the Punchau, the great sun disk with emeralds and all that stuff still hidden. And the architecture is extraordinary. We also went to Kinko, which is really weird, and another place which has a Amaro Machai and Tambo Machai and Ollantay Tambo and all these places. In fact, Ollantay Tambo has several styles of architecture, including part of the Tiwanaku'an one, and it has these really huge blocks of pink granite that have been moved about 3 miles up toward the top of the feature. And those are they have tenons and mortises, and that's one of the features you also found on some of the Bimini stones. In fact, one of the most unique ones, it was kind of funny when Greg and I were there, and Laura needs to get credit. She does a lot of work. It was a flat stone with a hole going down in, paralleling, then coming out like you were supposed to put a rope in the thing. And it was interesting, and I think it was during that same dive or at least the same trip, that Greg and I were doing some stuff. He stretched his fingers out, you know, to let me know to measure one of the things, which I did. It turned out we didn't bring that block up, but we brought two other ones up, and I measured that. Later on in the evening, one I found left underwater, and the one that was on the boat had identical measurements of about 23 and a half inches, which is probably a cubit measurement. So we have a uniform system of measurement. They have live rock engineering. They have it so the water can flow through and keep it there. It's by any definition conclusively a harbor site. So, and, you know, my opinion has been personally that you have to go underwater because that's where the deeper stuff is, because the big controversy with the Bimini Road was if it's a harbor site, like Rebikov had said, it would have been 300 feet above the water during the time of Atlantis, which is kind of a problem, you know. But there are other things, and sometimes you wonder whether people were actually at the Bimini Road or elsewhere. I'd mentioned to you when the Littles and I were going out, the cameras there, and Laura and I were looking through this camera, and we were at least in 45 feet of water, and we both said the same thing. It looks like a pavement pattern down there. And even in when I did you know, what we call being shark bait, where they tow you, you know, with a line, you're looking at the bottom, you can see down 100 feet. And Claude Swanson and I, who has his own website, and he's a PhD in physics and all this stuff. So it's clearly not all cultists who are involved in this. In fact, most people I know have college educations and all that. I was seeing things at the bottom where vegetation was defining geometric shapes, and that's one of the things you find on surface archaeology too. But, you know, you don't want to go down to look at a couple of plants if it's 100 feet down, because you're doing one dive and that's about it.
Do you think that the Bimini Road was a poured structure, or do you think it was laid with monolithic size stones? Because those stones are massive.
But they really are. There's some that are relatively small, but there's others that are about 18 feet or more. And the intriguing thing, the last time I was out there, I'd followed it, and we went almost a mile past. I didn't realize that because the dive lady was getting a little bug that we were gone so long. And it seems to continue even further than they say it does. But it seems to have had three different types of features. They have the big base stones like you see, the rounded ones that look like the Peruvian stuff. They have some extraordinarily well-worked ones. They have some that are leveling stones. I found the first one, and Greg got really interested in that. We found several. They're kind of wedge-shaped, and that's also used in the Mediterranean. They have some that are basically just kind of like rectangles, but then they have some that have complicated tenons and mortises on it, like one I call Donnie's stone, which had both features. And Zinc's people found that too. Zinc actually had Navy SEALs working with them, and they found one that could not. People say it's dropped off a boat. It's like, well, that's impossible when you consider this particular one was found in a little tube-like cave that's actually at the Three Sisters, which is off Bimini. That's where one of the SEALs found the artifact. And I don't think they're into faking artifacts, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, they found five legitimate artifacts there. So it's clear that the Bimini Road is artifactual. So is the Anguilla Cave, which has a huge semicircular stone enclosure. And as I told you, the boat couldn't go in there when we did the TV program that you'd cited.
What were the artifacts that they found? What five artifacts?
One of them was actually, which they left in there, was a Matati-type figure. I think it weighed about 200 pounds. One was a marble stylized head, which we're not sure where that went, but it was finally brought up. It weighed about 200 pounds. There were several building fragments, one of which was divisible by 10 on all of its measurements. And it had a tenon and a mortise. And it was comparable to the one that the late Donnie Fields had found, who'd spent a lot of time working with us and various other groups. So these ones are the much more refined stones. They are probably on the top. Now, the pier which I found, I got a lot of time to look at it. And I think that there's, aside from a modern debris field, I think that it was probably much more extensive. And there's one break in the field. And it's kind of funny because when it was the last thing that we were doing in June of 2006, and Greg asked what I want to do, so Laura and I were in the water. And we saw this thing, which it's a complicated and long story about why we're looking there, but it had to relate to a dream that I had years ago, and also something, an observation Jonathan Eagle made at Anguilla Cay, which also has the promontory working out into a type of pier. It's a solid mass. It'll last literally for thousands of years. I think they're still using some of the Mediterranean. And
okay.
You know, so anyway, we were doing that, and The features of both seem to be the same. There are also features at Andros, and the Littles have done a lot of work at Andros, and I think there's some stuff at Jolter Key also. I was lucky a friend was able to give me a map that had been Valentine's, and it had some of the markings, and we actually checked those out in an aerial survey we did in 97 and completed in 98.
So here, let's talk a little bit about the unorthodox reference material. So... Casey describes the Bimini area as a possible site. Of course, he talks a great deal about the Yucatan and other parts of the world. Of course, the one of the most famous is the Sphinx, and I think it's the right front paw. There's a chamber in there. We had Robert Schock on a few months ago or weeks ago, and he actually described that he said he wants to go back and get to the bottom of that room, that space in the front, and see what's under there. And I don't know if the Egyptian government will allow him. We know Hawass used to balk at that and say, "Yeah, there's nothing in there." But I think he's also interested. But How did you get involved with the Edgar Cayce group, and why do you feel that his reference is usable material as an archaeologist? Why? Because I mean, I'm not an archaeologist, but his material is very detailed. Tell me what you think about
that. Yeah, the wording is really weird, too, which makes it kind of hard to do. In fact, I've always been interested in psychic stuff because of some personal things happened when I was really young, but I didn't even buy Edgar Cayce in Atlantis until I'd actually looked at it several times at the drugstore. That was in the 60s, and then I got a little bit more involved in some of that. And there are some things that seem familiar, but one of the more intriguing things about the Cayce one is his very specific detailing of technological devices, especially what's called the Firestone, Tuoi. And this actually helped on a project I was doing. I'm trying to reconstruct what might have been a proto-language. So I thought, well, maybe he called it Firestone. Maybe that's what they actually translate as. So I found out that the Mayan word tuk means burn. The Sumerian word napatu for naphtha means stone that burns. And then in the Canary Islands, something that goes all the way across, you have a mountain called Orotava, which means mountain of fire. And so when you use glottal chronology, you kind of go backwards. Tava becomes Tva, and it becomes Twa. And so it basically comes to the same word, and it shows more evolution, like it might have been the fur point. And to tie this in linguistics, you learn certain sounds are pronounced in different parts of your throat, like ah at the bottom, o in the center, u at the top. So, well, maybe u means high. It turns out the Sumerian name for their sun god is Utu, which would be high fire. And you got a bunch of words, like you mentioned, Atlan. That's something that actually got my attention in late 70s, during my master's, was anthropological linguistics, and they said that the Indo-Aztecan languages, through which Hopi and Aztec and all those are descended, split apart into various dialects around 10,000 BC in the southwest. Well, in Nahuatl, the word for water is Atl, the word for land is Tlan, and it's an agglutinating language, so you put them together, you have Atlan. They also have a goddess called Atlatona, which means she who shines amidst the waters. So he has some really cool linguistic stuff going on, and the word Mu is also one has a lot of interesting references. Most of the islands off California have the name Mu attached to it. It means ocean or sea.
Mm-hmm.
And water in Egyptian.
Fascinating. So I guess the Bemini was the first area you did some dives and some in to check out.
The easiest to check out.
I'm sorry?
Oh, the easiest to check out. We'd heard of stuff at Andros, but it actually took flyovers to actually find those. It would have taken an immense amount of time. The aerial surveys are really good there because you can see down to the bottom on the whole Bahama Banks. And what most people don't realize is that this was not a small island. It was basically the size that Plato had indicated. When you put the Grand Bahama Bank, Little Bahama Bank, and the Caisal Bank, all as dry surface area. And as we talked, you know, Florida was twice the size. The Campeche Bank of Yucatan was exposed and so on. So it was a lot of dry land back then.
So there was much more dry land. Do you theorize that the Bemanis were connected to Cuba, or where was the dry land? What is your estimation on the total land mass that the Bemanis were once associated with?
Yeah, Bemanis basically, like Cayce said, the highest point of a once great civilization. And when it went down the sub, you could see it really was a small mountain. But the whole Grand Bahama Bank was solid land. You could have walked from one area to the other. It was really close to Cuba. And the one everybody's interested in is the stuff off of Cuba, which is on the western side. A land bridge that connected Cuba to Yucatan, and Zelitsky's find is basically dead center, so it would have been an ideal place to go. But that's one of the hardest places you could possibly do work, whereas what we're looking at at Bemini now is between 80 and about 300 feet. And we've used submarines there.
Okay.
Submarines are one of the best things to document with.
Okay. Now, you've just brought up a question I had. Now, Paulina Zielinski and her husband made this discovery off the western coast of Cuba using her remote viewing devices. She doesn't get the details that you get, but she does show what appear to be marble stone blocks, the tips of a could be a pyramid. I'm not sure what's defined. What is your take on her discovery? And did you ever have any association with her at all?
I haven't, but we heard really early on Doug Richards and I were talking about it because of the depth of this thing, you know, like 1,200 feet or so. It's like if this had gone down quickly, it would have taken apart the Great Pyramid. So what has been found since is I think it's on a large piece of bedrock. It may have gone down a little slower, and then you have a rise of sea levels of between 300 and 400 feet, so that will do part of it.
Mm.
But basically, it's pitch black down there. Nobody's ever going to dive down there, at least not with anything that we have, so it would be remote things and submarines that would do that. And I'm always a little cautious of the artistic representation because there's a lot of leeway taken on that. And first, we were even discussing whether it was boxcars that may have been dropped, but they're oriented. And some of the other, the more recent images look like it's artifactual, you know. So it's an interesting site, but it's going to be one of the most difficult places to work. In fact, the only place more difficult would probably be outer space, you know.
Yeah, because it's a mile underwater.
It's deep.
yeah, and but it's just
but apparently
because
apparently it was above the surface. So they know that there was I think a river and a fault and a volcano in the area.
But the thing that's amazing to me is that it was announced in last year that she was going to be funded by the National Geographic Society to do a significant second dive to determine and maybe survey that area. Do we know anything about that? Did she
I only hear second and third hand accounts, and I know that current government.
So you don't know anything about it.
Yeah, so the current government seems to be not as into that. Now, Fidel Castro was kind of into it because she'd found the remains of the warship from the Spanish-American War, the Maine, you know, and they were looking for other stuff. And
right.
The geologists initially were not supporting her position, and then the Cuban geologists did start supporting her position. And from what I understand, one of the projected projects would have cost something like $2 million, which is probably right considering the type of equipment you'd be using down there. And that's expensive by any definition.
But here's the million-dollar question. Is there any reference to what she discovered and what you and the Littles discovered off the Bimini? Is there any reference points that you have indicated or you discovered that give you a feeling that maybe these are similar ruins?
Yeah, I wouldn't say the Bimini Road, but I say the stuff I have on side scan is very similar because she had initially just said they looked like some of the Mesoamerican structures, which is what we found in the pictures you saw, that kind of resembled the Puuc Mayan architectural style with kind of the flat terraced things and the staircases and all that stuff. So I think there probably is a connection with the style. And that's also found in Peru, too. I mean, the pyramids there are actually closer to those in the Canary Islands in actual appearance.
Okay, all right. So we've determined that you really haven't followed Zelensky's work. I mean, you've kept an eye on it, but obviously her stuff is very, very touch and go. Not the level of detail that you have discovered. So let's get back to Bimini. You did some dives at Bimini. You and the Littles found some references, and there are some artifacts that were found in nearby caves. From Bimini, where did you start plotting and discovering these what appear to be pyramids and these large structures along the Bimini Island area? So how did you get going on that?
Okay, well, first began in when we did the side scan in 93. We went out from South Bimini, headed north to a little above the Bimini Road. Then we headed down to Gun Key, and the equipment gave out. And that distance, this was using the old side scan stuff, there were probably at least 30 anomalies. There were quite a few of them near Gun Key. Turns out that's a dumping area, but some of these things were like right-angle features and concentric circles and so on. And we did try to, when we first used the submarine in 98, that was the first area we went down, and the one thing I did see there were these rectangular patches of sand and vegetation, which turned out to have some reference to things at Bimini that the tech divers, Bill Mee and his group, that Joan Hanley had found in the Bimini area, and they were partly using some of our coordinates. It turned out our coordinates were a third of a mile off. They had to go further out to find these, what appeared to be switchbacks and all this stuff and some rectangular patches, and then when we did the submarine, the next year, we went down on, first off, we found some interesting things. As I'd mentioned, we did that. Then we also did Bimini, and they found out that apparently a waterfall had come out of entrance points, which at one point must have fallen 300 feet, you know, down to the bottom. There were some unusual things, but basically we went back in 99 to try to relocate what those images that were from 98, which is the side scan images. You have the yellow and red ones, which... One of them, I realized what it was later on after you're there. It was simply a ridge, but the other ones looked entirely like buildings, and as I told you, you can measure the system in the computer, and they are all proportionate to human architecture. The one in the center looks like a tiered structure, like a Mayan temple pyramid. It has a stepped-back feature where they do their rituals, and a superstructure like that with apparent doorway, a staircase going up, an attached one to the side, and a little to the left of that image is there's a post and lintel systems, which again are like 12 feet across or so. And then the one you mentioned with the roof, which also had squared shadows and other features. And when I called Marine Sonic, talked to one of their technicians, he said, well, that's a hard target. In other words, it was not an error. And that one showed some column features, which were roughly a foot and a half thick, and just like you would expect in a wall about 75 feet long. So, you know, it's like...
So when you left the Bimini area, what did you... Were you working with other people's discoveries? Is that what led you to go whatever direction you went to begin looking for these ruins?
No, not really. We knew the area we'd been in in 1993, so I put four grids together, long ones, about two-fifths of a mile, somewhere a little bit longer, three-fifths, and even like maybe close to 2 miles long. And this, what I used was the newer data that Dr. Michael Fott had done with sea levels. And even though we know there are changes between 300 and 400 feet, maybe even more, by the end of the Pleistocene, at the very end of it, it had only been like 120 feet lower. So I realized if we're looking for something at the end of its history, we could do that. Jonathan Eagle had also had satellite photos that would penetrate about 60 or 80 feet, so I overlapped that. I knew the area we needed. So we were basically doing above Bimini to below Bimini along the western side. One in the middle did not get done, but the northern one, which was above Paradise Point, had all the good stuff in it. When we got it, multiple oriented features, right-angled features, and what appears to be a re-imaging from a different angle of the pyramid-type feature.
Where's Paradise Point? Give us a reference from Bimini.
Yeah,
that's on North Bimini.
Yeah, it's North Bimini toward the north, toward the end of it. And it's you can easy to find on the map because there's three little things called La Chance Rocks or Three Sisters, which is where one of Zing's people found one. And the Bimini Road is above that, about three-quarters of a mile out. So actually, the Bimini Road is the further of the more recent features out, yeah.
Okay. So you basically began your own research to find more significant references to a culture. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and it turned out that the area picked out was the best we could probably do. Now, there's also stuff off of South Bimini. It looks really good. At first, I thought it was debris. Then I realized it's not. You know, I thought some were three automobiles. Apparently, there's stones, and there's a very well-defined area, and I indicated that in some of the stuff I'd shown to you. So, you know, it seems to be stretching all over, but the bigger stuff, or at least the complex we were looking that most people have gone to, is the one that's north of Paradise Point. And, of course, we can't give out GPS coordinates because we're working with the Bahamian government, and, you know, they don't want people doing that. Apparently thousands of people came to there.
Yeah, that was my next question. And all the scans that you have sent me and the ones I've posted, you've purposefully removed the coordinates, the latitude, longitude coordinates, so people could go find those. And I guess you don't want people – you don't want to do that because the whole world will jump all over this. So,
well, even with the Bimini Road, they literally had stressed the things because thousands of people came over just to look at that when it was first discovered, you know. And that's been damaged, by the way. Yeah, that was damaged. Somebody apparently in the 30s, a guy named Sears, had removed these to take him to Florida. And so it's definitely a damaged feature, whereas the stuff at Anguilla Cay and Andros are comparatively undamaged.
Okay.
And what we're seeing is a cultural history here that goes back a long time, you know, and then incorporates several cultures, not just Atlantean.
Okay. So I want to remind our audience that they can call in. The phone number to call and ask Bill a question is 347-826-9565. And this is a fascinating discussion we're having, and you're welcome to ask any questions you want. We'll take them here in a bit. I'll try to take a few, and then we'll wait till the end. But for now, we have more to discuss. So let's talk about these size scan sonars. I've posted a couple that were taken in 2006. And actually, it appears that a significant number were taken by that. Tell us what a size sonar scan is, what the technology is, and tell us how... how it works, and are you actually on a boat as this is being done, or are you underwater? Tell us about this.
I have been on a boat, like the 93 one, and in 99. The other time, the groups did it themselves. They're the people that know what they're doing, and it depends on the size of the boat. The good thing is you can do it at day or night. It's an acoustic wave. It's kind of like radar or sonar. You have basically there's generally two type things that are kind of like overlapping with eyes, and you have to meld the pictures together. But usually, the depending on the depth, you're putting the side scan fish, which sends out the pulse at about 50, 70 feet or depending. Now, the images from 98 that look so good, they were down very low at somewhere between 17 and 23 feet, and they appear to be parallel to the feature. You don't actually see the top or the bottom. You're looking almost dead straight on it from a slight angle. Whereas the 2006 images shows what is clearly from more like an aerial perspective. You're seeing more like the top of it. And those two images, there are five corresponding features, so they're either the same feature or not. And there was one from 99 that also looked like a tiered structure that is different. So there's at least two
structures, maybe three. Let's talk about that for a second. Here's what is the depth of water that this scan is being made of? What's the depth?
Okay, yeah, when they first... they were saying 80 feet, but when the divers went down, they were finding it was like 15 feet lower, and I always would trust the divers' gauges more than the other stuff. And it goes down to the features themselves, I don't know about the size scan, goes down to almost 300 feet, I think like 287 or something like that. So it goes down to the 10th millennium very easily and probably to the 17th millennium BC.
Okay, so if that's the case, if it's so what are you saying the true depth is, over 100 feet?
Most of these seem to be at around 100. In fact, when I went down on the first dive, the Monday, the Ocean Technologies LLC said they thought they had some stuff I'd like to see, and they were right. And so I looked at the image even before they put together the next day, and they gave us GPS. We went down. It was about 96 feet, but it was nothing there. So we came back up, and they said, well, the quality is good. So it turned out they had to correlate the two different GPS systems. I think one was digital or whatever. So the next day we went down, it turned out to be 126 feet. And I ended up having a problem with my regulator, good equipment, but it wasn't giving enough pressure there. But the place I was at seemed to be the right one. Esley, the guy who owned the boat, had dove in the water first and saw a rectangular stone and took a while to position it just right. And then his wife, who's the dive master, went down with me. And we seemed to be on a very flat area that had like a 45-degree angle down to another area. It was only about 3 or 4 feet difference in elevation. It couldn't have been a shoreline because it was just too sharp and too short. And at that lower level, there were these coral heads that looked like they were equally spaced. And then I had too much of a dive problem and had to come up because I couldn't breathe down there.
A question I have: if the scan is revealing staircases, tiers, which would be pyramid tiers, different levels, and columns, it shows it on the scan. Were you able to see any of this when you were down there?
I'm actually thinking, I think there's a good possibility that where we went down was part of the area in the feature, because even the other one that has the rectangle that's, 65 by 39 feet, which the guy also with the technologist said was, a real thing. This is a large area. That's like 105 feet separated from that. So what we were going to do was go down and do a drift dive, but the weather kept getting worse and worse and worse, and we were never able to do that. The littles, Greg had gone down on some of those rectangular features a couple of times, and then they did that one program that was there. When they did the program I was supposed to be with, but I couldn't because of a problem with a very sick animal. We were going to do my stuff the second day. The first day was fine. David Ulloa went down and had a rebreather and covered basically 2 miles of what would have been the shoreline from 10,000 BC. Greg was able to look at all the video and counted 35 rectangular structures, including a fairly large one that was something like 24 by 36 with 6-foot high walls, anchors, and a ramp leading into it, and all this other stuff. And initially, when the ARE group looked, they found like 3 of them, but they were all identical in size with a standard unit of measurement,
So who was with the ARE group? Were you with them, or is that the Littles that went with them?
The
Casey group?
The ARE group? No, the ARE group, I had the permit, and I had called the Bahamians to let them know that my associates are going to go. And they were actually going to do some more size scan. They had my stuff and Joan Hanley's, and then they did a little bit of their own. Ours tend to be a really good area. Yeah, and so what they also found was something that we saw that I videotaped in the submarine, and that's what the terraces, but they got very good pictures of them. I mean, these are sharp, right-angle, big-step terraces that are down pretty deep. I think it's like 187 feet, but I'm not sure.
Wow. Let's take a question. If you're going to ask a question, I'm going to call on you. Give us your first name and where you're calling from. So let's take a question. Hi, this is you're on the air. What's your name?
Cliff, is this? Are you talking to me?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
I'd like to ask a question.
All right, wasn't sure. This is Robert, and I'm calling from Atlanta.
Okay.
Excellent work as always, Cliff. I've got three questions. The first one for Bill. Greg Little had done an interview with William Henry back in November, I believe, of 2012. And in that interview, he stated that they had some new finds, and he was, I believe, if I'm correct, he was in the process of putting together a DVD with some of this new information that he had found. And I think that interview is still up on Whitley Strieber's Unknown Country site. Are you familiar with that, and do you have any updates on it?
He actually put a lot together, and Greg's website, I think it's Ancient Mysteries or Ancient-Mysteries or something like that, has a lot of their things. They did have an article within the last year in Atlantis Rising about some stuff south of Bimini, and there are apparently like two different sites, one fairly deep and one really close to the surface. With regard to whether they're doing that or not, I don't know, because usually Greg and Laura put them together. They have their own equipment to do that. And they're really, really excellently, really great quality video, and they do a good job of it. And basically, I haven't heard anything about that new one. He has done a more recent, I think, series on the mound builders. And Greg, even though he's not by training an archaeologist, psychologist, he does have a PhD. He has a good background. Mm-hmm. And so far as I know, he's looked at like 1,000 mounds, which is more than most archaeologists look at.
Yeah, it sounded in the interview like he had some fascinating information that he was going to reveal in this new work that he had just done. So I've been looking for that, and I'll take a look at the Atlantis Rising. I'm a subscriber to that, and they do some great work as well.
Yeah, well, one important thing that Greg also and Laura have done is they found a number of planes that supposedly went down in the Bermuda Triangle. So a number of them have been, I think it's like 20-something that have been located now. So at least some of the relatives will have some peace knowing what happened to
them. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Robert, did you have another question?
Yeah,
the second question is about Paula, I think it's Zeitla.
Zalitsky.
The work that she, Zalitsky, that she had done off of I guess it's the western coast of Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
I heard recently that they're planning to do a new expedition with her and her team. Are you aware of that, and do you have any information on it?
I've heard, but when you do these things, it has to do with funding and all that. And even though if it may be, like I'd heard, $2 million, you would probably get that. Even the stuff they're doing in Cyprus, this guy was getting hundreds of thousands of dollars, and his feature turned out to be a natural feature, whereas hers looked very artificial and certainly important. I'm wondering how the things got at that depth. I mean, you know, what did it go down on the whole piece of bedrock? And certainly the sea levels rose, you know, like close to 400 feet, too. So you got all that going on, and you wonder what's left there, which makes any work there going to be very, very difficult. You know, it's like literally like working on another planet.
Yeah, a lot of the imagery that she had done, I think the original work was done back in the early 2001, mm-hmm. 2003 period, was just fascinating. And
it took forever to get into the regular news thing. It was on Art Bell, and then it wasn't until like 6 months later it was in the regular newspapers.
Yeah, and, you know, you that read a lot of the different journals and, you know, whether it's on the conspiracy blogs or some of the independent researchers or the alternative news, there has been some comments made about, you know, the Navy knowing about this area and have done a lot of impediments to people doing any further work down there because of whatever else the Navy has going on around Cuba and in just the Gulf of Mexico itself. So I hope she gets the funding and is able to get down there because the original images were just fascinating.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, it looks artificial. Yeah. Like I'd indicated, we heard that they might be, somebody's theorizing boxcars dumped over, but they're oriented, and that's not going to happen if you just drop stuff over there to get rid of it, you know?
Right.
Yeah,
and then
there's like
Robert,
do
you have
go ahead.
Robert, did you have one final question? Because we want to move on. Go ahead and ask your last question.
Yeah. You had mentioned Claude Swanson earlier, and Claude is somebody that I've followed and really appreciate his work as not only a PhD in physics, but, you know, he's gotten into a lot of alternative or quote-unquote alternative areas as far as energy. What was your interest in and in mention of Claude Swanson?
Well, he was actually involved with our Bimini group close to the beginning. He actually helped with when we were doing the side scan with Tom Vandeveer and Donnie Fields and Vonda Osman and all that. We were all there at the same time. And then it was both Claude and I who were actually being towed by the book to look, by the boat to look at the bottom, see if we could see the features. And he's done some of his own research since then also. He was also a member of our nonprofit for a while, too.
Outstanding. Well, he's a great individual and great work,
nice
Bill.
Guy.
And Cliff, carry on, sir. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Robert. Appreciate your questions and your call. Again, if you want to ask us a question, ask our guest, Bill Donato. Our question is, the number is 347-826-9565. Now, Bill, what I have seen, the most impressive side scan is the I think it's the 2006 work where – isn't that the one where there's – it looks like a – I would say it's the closest representation of a Mayan pyramid from Tikal. And the reason I say Tikal is they have this extremely tall, narrow staircase. And but, of course, what's unusual is it's attached to other – features or another structure. Now, what is your feeling of that? I mean, we haven't really talked about that in any detail in the conversations we have. That alone would be enough for me to want to go back and go, okay, we got to check this out.
Yeah, is the image you're looking at, is it black and white or is it yellow and red?
It's yellow and red.
Okay, that's
98. And I'll be posting these. Yeah,
yeah,
oh,
that's
98. 98.
That was the one that okay. caused us to continue all the other work, because when we saw that in 98, we went back in 99, and it wasn't until a little bit later that we found out that the GPS was off by a third of a mile, so we didn't find the features. Because when they said Rover City 1 or whatever, I thought, that's impossible. I can see the bottom, you know. This thing would be sticking
where
up
is that,
the
by way. The way? Where is that located? What part of
that,
the...
That is. I'm not sure the depth on that one. That is definitely above the Paradise Point area. That's in the area that they did in 2006. Yeah, that's what we were trying to retarget in 2006, and it looks like we got it. And we also got one from down from Gun Key from the 1993 scan, so we were pretty lucky on that. And that one appears to be more modern. But that the one you're looking at, I mean, I looked at that, and some people thought it might be side scan and all this, an error, and I've seen side scan errors, and it's like a square wave. It looks like artificial things, but this doesn't repeat any images. And that attached feature is a common feature in some of the Mayan architecture. One of my teachers was a Mayanist and stuff. And it looks more like Mayan than anything else. But, you know, a lot of these cultures were using these stepped features, like in the Canary Islands as well. And, you know, Casey had indicated that there was a native people there, that the people from Mu had come in early, and then the Atlanteans came in, and apparently it was a peaceful one with the Atlanteans, but then there was some kind of a conflict that developed between the people and the Andes, which is kind of a long-distance conflict. But he had indicated which features were from the different cultures, and the ones he sided with Atlantis have actually been found. He indicated the circular altars, which are only found in a few cultures. The Mayans, the later Toltecs have it. I saw what looked like one at Tiwanaku in front of the quadrangle in Bolivia. And they apparently had circular altars with cereal offerings in Minoan Crete. They found one in an Etruscan cemetery in what appeared to be a ritual thing with a figurine of a nude female and a bowl with water, which seems to have some kind of symbolic thing. The other was, he mentioned... magnetized stones to which the spirit of the one spoke, which was a religious thing. These were found, and they're made of three particular stones, ilmenite, hematite, and magnetite, which is lodestone. And they found little figures wearing these things like they're in a prayerful attitude. They also have an interesting curvature, so they'll reflect an upside-down image on a flat surface. But the curvature is not good enough to actually start a fire, so that's an interesting thing that may tie in directly to Atlantis and the Middle American things.
But I have to ask you, if you have, I mean, that image is so amazing.
That's been the driving force.
It's so tight. I mean, have you published that in any journals?
That was actually in the Bahamas Business. Yeah, I copyrighted that and some others some years back. There were about five that were good. Two, I'm not sure whether they're either shipwrecks or ruins, but that one and the other one with the rectangular feature are probably part of the same feature. It was in an article I did for the Bahamians in the Bahama Businessman's handbook, so that one should be in there. Unfortunately, some people don't know what they're looking at, so I have to tell them which is the bottom and the top. It was published in Hera magazine in Europe, but it was published upside down.
Oh, my God. I mean, to me, it's the best reference or the best evidence of a sunken culture. And
That's what we're looking at. Yeah, that's the whole point of our continuing project. And if this, and we verify specifically that image, that becomes ipso facto one of the most famous pictures in the history of archaeology. It's like the moon footprint. It'll be first proof of Atlantis, period.
Exactly. Exactly. Let me ask you, I have studied Mayan archaeology, architecture, and one of the interesting features, and maybe you can tell me if it's just the sonar or it's just the way it is, it appears to me there's a pyramidal structure which has the long staircase and the tiers, which is very reminiscent of Tikal pyramids. But then to its immediate left, there's another structure with these, which appear, it has columns and then open doors and then more tiers. Is it your understanding, based on your dives and what you're seeing, that we're looking at one massive citadel or a complex?
I think you're correct with the term complex, because they seem to be connected, like they're part of one whole area, but they're distinct things. Like the one you mentioned, that looks like it has a roof, and it does. It looks almost like the roofs of a Palenque. That's kind of interesting. And you have to figure that if there hadn't been too much of a shaking, and if this was primarily from water rising, we would have some standing structures, especially if they're made of stone.
But the thing that's unique is, and I'm going to reference a place I went to, Ek Balam, which is in northern Yucatan. About 2 years ago, they completed the construction on a complex. And what's unique about this complex is it's multi-tiered, has a massive central staircase, and from the ground up, there are little there's the tiers, and then within the tiers, there's rooms, and then on one side, at the far left, almost at the very top, there's these stucco sculptures that are now famously referred to as the they call it the grouping one, I think they call it, and it's unique, and I don't know if there's any other reference like that, and they don't say Puuc, they don't give it a determining style, and it seems to me that this discovery that you have is very similar to that. Are you familiar with the Ek Balam ruins?
I'm familiar with the name. I'm not necessarily familiar with the picture, but it's like we're using a similar style of architecture, so there's going to be similarities and differences. And the one you'd ask a question about, connecting this to the Atlantis thing, well, when Casey did his Hall of Records thing, which the three areas, the one area which was Giza was specifically spelled out, and Bimini, but of course Bimini was just Bimini, and it's like we got a lot of water to check out. But the other one in Yucatan, he'd indicated that the I think it was the University of Pennsylvania was investigating at the time, and it was a specific year, like 1932 or something. And they did contact him, and they were investigating one side, Piedras Negras, and they had Satterthwaite and Mahler and some other big-name archaeologists. And something they found there has not been found, so far as I know, at any other one. I know Scott Milburn, who had done some research with the area, had also found it, and they're called column altars. Now, Mayan columns are typically square. Now, there are some round ones, but apparently these column altars are associated with marine offerings underneath them, sea offerings. And the original investigators saw that apparently it was located with respect to certain temples, like it was some sort of a calendrical or calendrical thing. And Edgar Casey had specifically mentioned these stones, which I know so little about, and had said that they would be interpreted as a sundial. Well, that's the gnomon part. I got some maps of Piedras Negras, and I found two areas that had these. And they are located basically where he mentioned the shadow falls across this, that, and the other thing, kind of like the one with the Sphinx and at Giza. So there's a similarity there. And that's why I think that one structure you're talking about at Bimini may be one of those structures, and maybe there's something that's buried in front of it. But at any rate, using entirely different data, the Littles came to the exact same two locations I did. So I think that is just astounding that we would both come to these two target areas. I did mine in like the early 90s, like 90 or so, and then they did theirs more recently. But we both came to exactly the same locations. They're under a plaza, and you could use ground penetration radar to locate them. Oh, by the way, you mentioned the size scan earlier. There's a beam of about 200 feet, and if you use sub-bottom, which penetrates 55, it's about 6 feet, so it's more expensive and takes longer. And our sub-bottom stuff also proves some interesting stuff in the Bay of Bimini, where it's shown that about 16 feet of material had been removed from this rectangular area, one quarter by a half mile in size. And that's a significant amount of work.
So tell us, for those of us who aren't scientific, tell us how a side sonar works. Now, it sends out a magnetic field that bounces off whatever is in its front of it,
what's picked up? Yeah, right. It's kind of like the water version of radar, so it's an electromagnetic thing in a certain kind of acoustic range. And, of course, you can use it at day or night, so it doesn't really matter if you're looking at it. And usually you'll have a false color thing like what you're seeing. Now, you can actually change in the computer. I actually changed it to blue, but it was a little darker because I wanted to know what it looked like. what I had actually had ordered to have done was to have a camera going when they're doing the side scan, but for some reason they couldn't. They can actually do side scan and sub-bottom at the same time, but considering the area is covered, it's kind of complicated. It's easier doing separate. And the camera would have been an extra locator. You know, so I'm sorry we didn't get that because the visibility is really great. You can see down on clear days to like 100 feet, so you would probably see some of these features.
So it's an accurate tool. Sonar is an accurate tool. I guess it's only good for up to a certain depth. Is that correct?
I'm sorry, something was interfering with what did you say? How deep it is?
How deep can you go with a side sonar?
I don't know if there's any limitation on that. You might be able to take it any depth that you want to. And there is one thing. Sometimes it may have a little bit of penetration. So you may actually be going underneath a little of the stuff covering. That's a friend of mine who had Thomas Vandeveer was telling me about it. He actually operated it in 93.
So let's take another question. This comes from Sandy in Taos, New Mexico. Have you discovered or do you have any knowledge of the Crystal Pyramid found in the Caribbean? So I don't know. I have seen some reference to that, but I haven't really studied it. Do you know anything about a crystal pyramid?
Yeah, I've been hearing about it for several months, and I didn't know it was actually in the Caribbean. Some people had it in the Atlantic and all this, that, and the other thing. And if something actually is, like a crystalline quartz, which is piezoelectric, if you're sending down some kind of an imagery like that, you're going to have some intriguing results from piezoelectricity and some acoustic vibrations and whatever. Everybody always tends to want to associate this. There may be structures there. We actually checked one out in 98 when we were at KSL the first time because it was actually in the Enquirer. And we didn't find that, but we found that the maps were off by about 2 miles. And we did find an underwater area that was close to the surface, about 60 feet, that wasn't on the maps. It was on the British ones, but it was off 2 miles. It wasn't on the American ones at all, but we didn't find anything on that one. The closest thing we found so far are those which you've referenced in the side scan images. So whether it's real or not, I don't know, but people always put a conspiracy element. There was something found, by the way, in the Canary Islands, and that was apparently done in the 80s by an Italian guy, and they had found apparently harbor or a roadway type thing, that was about 65 feet. And anything that's over 30-something feet, according to the people at Scripps, is fairly ancient. So things have been found basically across the Atlantic, also near Morocco. And, of course, you had Maxine Asher's stuff off of Spain, which was kind of interesting, too.
Mm-hmm. Now, have you or the Littles or anyone that you're aware of brought up any artifacts or sculptural or pottery or anything that is daily wear? I'm just going to use the term daily wear. It could be whatever, you know, was carved or was created from molds or things like that. Have you guys discovered or brought anything up like that?
No, just basically rocks, some of which are shaped. Some of the things that I removed from the Paradise Point Pier were clearly building fragments. So one has a little like mortise in it and, you know, things like that, and the anchors, of course. But not that. I had heard, I think Marx had discovered and indicated there was some pottery that had been found in one place, but not yet. And also, pottery actually survives pretty well in stone, you know, if it's not smashed to pieces. And that's what we would expect to probably find on some of those rectangles that are in the side scan areas. But for one thing, there's a lot of coral growing over it, so that might make it difficult, but it might also help preserve it. And coral grows over a solid surface, so if it takes a geometric form, you might want to look at that.
Interesting. There's one photograph that I found of and it might have been a YouTube, but Greg Little is holding a piece of what looks like marble. And do you know if any carbon dating or any dating has been done on anything that's been brought up, just to give yourself an idea of I do know that seawater tends to make carbon dating a problem because it interferes with the referencing. But do you know of any dating that's been done?
Yeah, with regard to carbon-14, when I was taking my courses, they said if you find charcoal, don't touch it because even the moisture in your hand will do it. But when you have certain types of rock that have organic material, I don't think the one at Anguilla had organic material in it, but the ones at Bimini did, and that was dating to the ADBC time frame. Within about 30 years, there is a form of radiocarbon that can be used on stones, and it probably has to do with the stuff that's in there. The stone that he had, was it dark or light colored?
It was very light colored. There's actually two photographs. There's one photograph. It looks like it's a block. He's wearing his wetsuit, and he brought it up from it looks like Bimini. And then there's another photograph where it looks like a piece of very high polished marble that I'm actually going to post on the Facebook page.
If this is recent, it might well be because they've been finding some stuff and also some schist and very large pieces in one area. When we were there, it was interesting. We were on the outer edge of the Bimini Road, and this is also a thing which is a mark against those to say it's a natural feature. I noticed a nice flat stone. I signaled to Greg and Laura. He came over. He's digging the stuff out, and I'd already found what was clearly an artifactual stone of limestone. And he's pulling all these black rocks out, and then I wrote on the slate, these are all artifacts. One was shaped like a doorstop, pretty big one. One was a little rectangle, and it was black stones that were shiny. There happened to be a geological group on Bimini at the time. The guy says, it looks a little felsine. Now, Greg had already asked me, I said, it looks kind of like granite, but a little different. Well, it turned out if it had had one more element in it, it would have been granite, but it was a contact metamorphic rock, and it was black marble. Black marble is not found at Bimini, but it is found on Cat Island, which is the one furthest east. And that's the island I'd mentioned to you, which Ron Smith was telling me about. And if you look at the map, it's shaped like a dolphin on a pedestal. And there are features between it and Little San Salvador that seem to tie in directly to Atlantis with concentric features and long canal-type features.
Hmm.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, the Littles found out something, too, that kind of ties this in. Apparently, no less a person than Charles Darwin had found the remains of an elephant in the Bahamas. And, of course, in the Atlantis story, elephants and horses both appear, and we know horses were here in that time.
So they found the remains, the skeletal remains of an elephant?
Yeah, how about that? I never heard of that before.
Wow, that's amazing.
The Littles have done a lot of good work, and they finance most of it themselves.
Okay, so...
For all of it.
We're getting down to our time here. What are your expectations for the future? I mean, do you feel that you have – I mean, looking at your work, Bill, I think that you have some pretty good evidence for structural remains from civilization. What is your next step? What do you want to do now?
Yeah, the plan has been pretty well put together. Basically, what we're going to be using is ROVs and some tow cameras. Jonathan Eagle had done the work with the tow cameras. We're going to go to the target coordinates, and we want to first do the ones that the Littles did because it's been done several times to make sure we have the right GPS. And, of course, that'll be documenting, and then we'll have an ROV go down and look at it. If it looks good enough, we go down, and we use the cameras they have in ours to measure things. And in the permit that I'm working for, again, trying to renew it, they've been changing their policy, I guess, since the beginning of the year. It will include artifact retrieval. And, of course, they would be dated if we find any. And so we're going to go to these ones. But instead of going to where they went, we're going to be going to the ones that look really good, like the tiered features. And so even though it shows it fairly clear, these may actually be covered with some debris, which might make them look a lot less clear than the images are themselves. But to do that, document and bring up. And, you know, basically, if we can find especially these bigger type features, Greg was suggesting the smaller ones may have been storage units, which he probably was correct because they were all similar, except for one.
Okay.
But these things are big. These look like ceremonial centers or something along that line. Yeah.
Wow. Now, you have continued your work. It used to be your foundation used to be Atlantis Organization. Now it's APEX.
Well, no, it's actually the same thing. The APEX was an outgrowth. The Atlantis Organization was letting people know. I haven't had an issue go out in like 10 years because I hadn't had time to do it yet. But APEX was done specifically to give donators, especially Don Dickens' Law of One Research, who support us many times, a tax write-off. So you get a full write-off for doing that. And I'm also associated now with Dr. John Clevenger, Genesis Quest. You can look it up. We're trying to put a series together where we investigate things like this, and the Bimini one is one of our
Now, can people send you donations to Apex Institute? Is there a website they can go to and get more information on your research?
That's a good question. I don't know about the donation thing for the website at the moment. Robert Longley, who you know, is basically redoing our website. Angela Michael had put it together, and she's still a member. She does the satellite stuff. And she had found an interesting site, as I'd indicated, on the KSL Bank, but we didn't locate it when we were going to the TV program, unfortunately. It looked good to everybody. Greg thought it was a TV producer, but we just didn't happen to find it. Most of these things you should go over by plane first just to check it out. But even in Anguilla, hey, we were having problems with the possible Cuban government, you know.
The Cubans don't want you to...
Anywhere.
So what is your plan? So is there, I mean, obviously funding is a huge issue. It's very expensive to rent this sonar.
Strangely enough, yeah, we wouldn't be doing that because we got all this stuff now. It'd be very cheap this time. The biggest problem has been the expense of the boat. If we get the boat, that'll do it. It'll be under $20,000 to be there a week and get the targets we can. The biggest problem is that diving on the features, depending on their depth, you're only going to do one or two dives a day. That's why we're using the ROV to do, you know, check out the stuff first. You know, of course, you'll have a monitor you can look at. So we've got it covered.
And I misunderstood you. Did you say you already had an ROV to do this, or you
My friend George McJunkin, who had actually worked for the Rebikovs, he has one. He may have sold it to a friend, but his friend is the guy that would be operating it anyway, and his friend was an Army diver, believe it or not. They actually have divers.
Wow. Fantastic.
Yeah. We got people that have really good backgrounds, yeah.
Yeah. You sound like you have a good team. So... In the remaining minutes, tell us what you would like to do with this discovery. What are your plans? What are you hoping to achieve with this discovery? Because I think you got some real solid material here.
Oh, yeah, I do too. I think, well, first off, it's cutting edge by any definition of the word. It shows civilization in the Pleistocene, it shows Atlantis, and it shows the validity of using some pretty good psychics in archaeology. And the Casey one tied in remarkably. I mentioned the 68 and 69. He never said 1968 and 1969. When Gladys wrote it, she put an apostrophe so people thought it was. And that was the only stuff that was known then. But he mentioned 1998 when there had been major solar activity, which there was. There was an equivalent of an eruption on the sun on 11 on the Richter scale. We were there about 2 weeks later. And that's when we got the images that you're talking about. And finally, when it was corrected and we had the Ocean Technologies group go out, it turns out that a couple of years after that, it was around 2008 or whatever it was, is exactly the 68th and the 69th year since Casey made the prediction. And this was specifically relating to Atlantis, and it was the stuff we found in the other data range. So that which makes it truly astounding, you know, because the dates tie in perfectly well.
Mm-hmm.
One that a lot of people have big problems with.
Okay, so you're just hoping to follow up on your discovery, and let me ask you a quick question. In that sci-fi program, A Quest for Atlantis, there's a psychic who actually talks about. Have you been using psychics for some of your plotting?
No, I was using. Actually, I discovered a couple of sites here because of dreams. So that's one of the interesting things. The Seahorse Mountain was discovered because of a dream. Some of the stuff at the east site, which I'd indicated, was the strata removal was related to that, and so on. But I had a really interesting dream that occurred some years ago. A number of the elements have come true, and it seems to indicate that things are going to be coming up more and more. And I think you can't hide this stuff. I give a pass on those people who say, well, there was no evidence, and they're right, but, they hindered evidence, too. People are trying to make it appear that only cultists and whatever were here. Zink wasn't a cultist. Rebikov wasn't at all. In fact, they didn't really like having all the, the cultist guys around. And
yeah.
Valentine was a really great guy. Valentine had spent something like 10 years doing aerial surveys over the Bahama Bank because he realized that it was a surface area. And he was a member of the Explorers Club, as was Zink and Rebikov. And Valentine's stuff was showing large-scale geometric features under the water in different parts of the Bahamas, including near Nassau and Bimini and all these other places, and it should have got somebody's attention, but apparently did not. There's some vested interest things going on, which is just ridiculous. I mean, since we've had the relatively conservative National Geographic putting Göbekli Tepe on the front cover and giving it a 9,600 date, well, clearly people had architecture back there. Robert Schock's newest article on Atlantis Rising of a 19,000-year-old feature on the surface at Indonesia, Yonaguni, mm-hmm. and all these other places, you know, it's just you can't ignore them. They're showing civilization was probably around for tens of thousands. One of the intriguing ones is the cement cylinders of New Caledonia, now giving a date of 12,000 years, which means in 10,000 B.C., somebody in the furthest place you could think was making cement cylinders and putting them on mounds, and there weren't a couple. There were at least 400 of them.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a lot.
So so you must look at discoveries like Göbekli Tepe and go, wow, that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, they actually have tours there now, too. Von Oz and my associate was the one to let me know about beforehand. Frank Joseph had visited me, and he'd actually helped us raise money for the first side scan thing. We've done some work at Bimini also, especially at Moselle Shoals where we got the granite samples. And
wow.
There is one thing that is unearthed that hasn't been found. I've been trying to look, and it apparently is in the region of Moselle, and it's a picture in one of Berlitz's books, and it shows a perfect set of hexagons set equally distant. That is clearly not anything jumped over, and it doesn't appear to be that deep, but nobody's found it yet, but it is clearly man-made. You know, and I remember finding a hexagonal stone on the Bimini Road one time, but this apparently is something different, and it's really very refined. The photograph is a standard.
Where's it located? Where's that?
It appears to be the Moselle Shoals, which is about 2 to 3 miles northwest of Bimini. You know, and there is one thing you got to make sure that you go at a good time of the year. Basically, spring through summer is pretty good, but we've been there during this post-hurricane season and generally had pretty good weather. You know, and with water conditions, but with what we're doing, the project, the key thing is to get it where the water is clear. You know, because otherwise you're going to have a problem.
Yeah. So it's been a real pleasure. I'm definitely going to have you on again, Bill. I think we could talk for 3 hours. We could talk for a whole day on this.
We did talk.
And take a break and then come back and talk some more. It's just so fascinating. I think that when we talk about Atlantis, it's in all of our consciousnesses. It's something that has a great fascination for
there is one
people.
More thing. I was talking to one guy, he was a geologist, and it had to do with the Gulf Stream, which Casey indicated, look, and he indicated that some geologists, he said, they're interested in your area, and he indicated there was a indication of a rapid tearing down and building up of material, suggesting there's some geological stuff going on. Casey made a specific prediction, he said, it must rise again, you know, in other words, it's part of the geological destiny of what's going on, and there's one theory that the tectonic plates may have actual layers. You know, when people say this stuff can't happen, all you have to do is look at Port Royal, which went down in one day. You know, stuff like that does happen. And those that keep trying to associate with the Minoans, and I think there may be some ethnic connections or otherwise, fail to realize that the Minoan civilization went on for literally 200 years after Thera blew its top. You know, and a lot of these places probably have an underpinning genetically or culturally, you know, to them, you know, all over the world. It's like Kenyan with Atlantis Rising, it's more like an Atlantis age, you know, kind of like a Lemurian age or whatever you're going to put it. But, you know, we don't have to use the word Atlantis. I think I've used it maybe one time in one report. Everybody else is going to call it. When you have something from the 10th millennium in the Atlantic and it's a civilization, what the heck else are you going to call it?
Exactly. Well, listen, do you have a website people can go to? Is there any reference?
I think it's also on that. It's in the process of being upgraded. It's apexinstitute.org. That's apexinstitute.org.
Okay.
And it has the pictures of the side scan that you're talking about up there, too, and maybe a few more.
Apexinstitute.org. And yeah. It's got more photos, and it kind of keeps an eye on what you're up to. Fantastic.
Well, Bill, it doesn't yet. It's been pretty stable for a long time. It's just we got to get upgraded more like Greg does with his.
Oh, gotcha. I'm thinking you're publishing soon. You must be ready to publish some of this material at some point.
Well, I want to wait till after I get, like I say, the final, you know, expedition of that stuff going on. But the report I've just finished basically writing it. It took a long time to get all the stuff together, and so I'm hoping to finally get it to the Bahamians this year. It's a long time.
Oh, okay.
There's hundreds of pictures that have to be, you know, labeled and stuff. So
I can't imagine. We'll have to talk offline here and see what other photographs because we definitely want to publish those. Been a real pleasure. Oh, definitely want to have you on again. Let us know what you're doing, and I will post your website for everyone to see. Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
As a reminder, next week my guest will be Jared Gardner, who wrote an e-book a couple of years ago called What Egyptologists Don't Want You to See, and he has just recently published part two of that book, where he shows a tremendous amount of unknown archaeology at the Giza Plateau in Egypt. And so he will be telling us about what else he's discovered and give us an update on the second book, which I believe he has on I think he has it on Amazon. So again, the book's called What Egyptologists Don't Want Us to See. My guest will be Jarrett Gardner. Thanks for joining us today. I hope you have a wonderful weekend, and we will see you next time.